You're listening to the Fox in a Phoenix podcast, understanding the feminine cross-dressing experience.
I'm Savannah Hawk, dual gender male to female cross-dresser, LGBTQ plus advocate, TEDx speaker, and author of the Living with Cross-Dressing book series.
And I'm Julie Rubenstein, proud ally and co-founder of foxandhanger.com, a feminine styling and life coaching service for cross-dressers and transgender women.
Welcome to another episode of the Fox in a Phoenix podcast. Today, we have a special episode because we will be doing a reading of Savannah Hawk's new book, Gender 101, an A to Z Handbook and Exploration. Part 1, Cross-Dressing is What You Do, Not Who You Are. Chapter 1, A Fairy Tale, with a quote from Alexander Dumas. Happiness is like those palaces and fairy tales whose gates are guarded by dragons. We must fight in order to conquer it. Once upon a time, a solitary crusader named Magnus lived in the far-off forested kingdom of Wimmargard. Was this man an armored knight who had sworn his sword in the service of a king and queen? Was he a sorcerer with inherent arcane knowledge? Was he a guardian of a sacred spellbook which he kept at the ready to combat the territory's foes? All we need to know for this tale is that his personal experiences and professional training will lead him on a treacherous and epic quest. During one of his many adventurous journeys through the realm, he encountered a particular group of people who were unilaterally pointed at as castoffs by members of the court and the local constables. Wherever these clans caught the notice of the kingdom's authorities and some landowners, they were labeled a scourge and considered to have a powerful pox upon them. While mostly they did not behave differently from other folks, they did have the ability through clamor magics to periodically take on different appearances. Magnus pondered their situation, thinking, were these shapeshifters dangerous to the prosperity of the land or peasantry? Based on their observed behavior, Magnus didn't believe them to be a threat. In his knowledgeable estimation, the shapeshifters were like any other persons, mainly keeping to their quiet lives. But that personal understanding did nothing to quell the authorities and the citizenry's growing fear and mistrust of the shapeshifters. Magnus named these shapeshifters Saradwins. Continuing his studies of their behavior and needs, he built a small estate as a refuge for them, keeping them under his care and within his charge where possible. The attempt to understand the Saradwins' motivations, not dissimilar to some of Magnus's own, was not enough. The local patrols, watchmen, and constables were still people in authority with whom to contend. So, Magnus used the power of his political influence in his advisory station to the king to create travel documents for the Saradwins. If the authorities stopped them anywhere throughout the realm, the papers would keep them from being further accosted or detained when in their clambered form. This documentation program continued for several years in Wimmargard under Magnus's purview. He researched the Saradwin community and took his scholarly scrolls abroad to educate the general populace about the clan and their shapeshifting abilities, all to allay their misplaced ignorance and fears. While Magnus was confronted by many impassioned naysayers during his tours to discuss the Saradwin's clans, he did make some headway when sharing his findings with other scholars and authority figures. As information spread and education grew, support and acceptance for the clan grew. That is, until the kingdom of Wimmargard was subtly overthrown in a coup by dissidents from within the royal government. His opinions were considered progressive, dangerous, and heresy by the new government. His work was stigmatized by the more conservative citizenry, and as a result, Magnus became hunted for his now unpopular views and was forced to escape to the safety of foreign lands. All of his research was forcibly abandoned, his sanctions and travel documents outlawed, and his estate and libraries were burned to the ground. The Saradwins were forced back into hiding for their own physical safety. They kept their shapeshifting private to avoid persecution by those now in position of power and authority. Underground communities sprang up from the ashes of the old regime, allowing them to at least find a sense of belonging and camaraderie in secretive, tight-knit groups. Unfortunately, while the kingdom's new rulers only held the seat of power for a decade, Magnus's advancements and discoveries were lost from the annals of research and eventually forgot to history. The Saradwins continued to hide away for fear of retribution and the penalty of harm or death, no longer able to obtain legal documents for safe travel. A century later, Sarage would become a negative slur used by people in polite society to label and ostracize anyone with shape-shifting abilities. Now, only the most outspoken few Sarawins brave the public eye, possibly facing scrutiny and harassment, and becoming cautionary tales for others hoping to live more general and integrated lives. Rooted in reality. What you just read above borders on fantasy fan fiction. You may think I have been streaming too much Critical Role on YouTube or delving too deep into the mythos of too many movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Maybe you expected me to write about a dragon raining terror with its fiery breath and leathery wings as it flew aerial sorties across the singed farmlands. Perhaps I'll save that for next time. The above story, like so many others in the genre of science fiction and fantasy, has a grain of truth to it. Whether as part of a morality play or cautionary tale, the stories that have been told, scribed, and passed down from generation to generation serve the grander purpose of teaching lessons and remembering history. In this case, the story of Magnus and the Sarawins is based on actual occurrences. Magnus Hirschfeld, born in the spring of 1868, became known for his outspoken career as a German physician and sexologist. He was educated primarily in Germany and based his practice in what we know as Berlin during the Weimar period before the rise of Nazism and the advent of the Second World War. He founded the Scientific Humanitarian Committee and the World League for Sexual Reform. His efforts were categorized as part of the first activism for homosexual and transgender rights. At the end of the first decade of the 1900s, during his career and outspoken advocacy for a better understanding of human sexuality and what we now label gender identity, Hirschfeld investigated and cataloged many varieties of sexuality, not just homosexuality. He developed a system that categorized 64 possible types of sexual intermediaries. The system ranged from masculine heterosexual males to feminine homosexual males. Within that spectrum, Hirschfeld included those he described as, quote, transvestite, a term he coined in 1910. He also described and coined the term, quote, transsexual in 1923. Just as a wizard, Magnus supported and helped the Sarawins with their traveling documents, Hirschfeld and other members from the Institute for Sexual Sciences issued a number of transvestite passes to people to protect them from police harassment. The transvestite passes were essentially doctor's notes recognized by the Imperial German and the Weimar Republic government. In Germany, between 1908 and the 1950s, dozens of these passes were granted. These passes were given to middle-class heterosexual male-to-female transvestites to avoid an association with gay and lesbian culture in Weimar-era Germany. The certificate stated the document holder was allowed to wear clothing that corresponded to their gender identity, not their biology. But while he sought to revolutionize how the public and medical professions thought about sexuality, he became a target by the Nazi regime for his radical views on human sexuality and gender, for being Jewish, and for being homosexual. His institute was sacked, his books were burned, and he was forced into exile in France, where he died in 1935. Recognizing research. The term transvestite during its inception referred to all individuals whose gender identity and preferred clothing were discordant to that associated with their assigned or birth sex. So this description included both who Hirschfeld considered to be crossdressers and those considered to be transgender people, something we in the modern LGBTQIA+ community sometimes struggle to recognize as being under the same inclusive umbrella. The term has undergone such a descriptive transformation over a century. Its original intent seems to have been somehow lost. Based on my own research of Magnus Hirschfeld, all in preparation for an episode of the Fox and the Phoenix podcast, where we were set to discuss people's reaction to the word transvestite, I finally admitted that for years I was in the same camp as so many listeners and responders who voiced their own distaste for the word, who considered it a slur, and or who felt a sinking feeling whenever they heard the word uttered. But why? Why did the term transvestite become such a word to be avoided? Well, like the etymology and semantic change of many words over the years, like how the word awful, literally full of awe, originally meant impressive. At some point, the shortened term tranny, originally an affectionate nickname originating within the community, became a slur in newsprint, television, media, and entertainment. Somewhere between the 60s and the early 2000s, those considered or labeled as trannies became demonized as socially defective and personally undesirable. From movies like Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho to Brian De Palma's Dressed to Kill to the NYPD Blues Season 10 Episode 15, Tranny Get Your Gun, the stigma of the intent and meaning of tranny morphed from a plot device of an unhinged and traumatized son to a murderous serial killer to finally a general use slur. In the mid to late aughts, news outlets started recognizing that the word tranny was as much a negative slur as the gay labeling F word. And within the same era, the word tranny was, and still is, slowly being reclaimed by the LGBTQIA+ community, most notably via RuPaul's Drag Race and Project Runway. In 2011, Lance Bass from NSYNC wrote an op-ed for HuffPost.com apologizing for his misunderstanding of and inappropriate use of the word. When growing up in the 1970s and 1980s, I was very aware both of the term transvestite and tranny and their textual context and public intent in that era. I understood them both as derogatory because of their use in general conversation and entertainment. Added to that understanding, all the written references of the words, remember, there wasn't such a thing as the internet, came from adult magazines hidden away behind the purveyors of the newsstand or in the more sexualized sections of the local magazine classified ads. And, as I have mentioned in the other Living with Crossdressing books, my only exposure to crossdressers and transvestites was through the media and literature of the day. There are a few channels to choose from in the pre-cable access television days, so even older movies such as Some Like It Hot were outside my purview until Blockbuster became a national video store rental chain. I watched Tom Hanks and Bosom Buddies and Dustin Hoffman and Tootsie. Even a movie like The Rocky Horror Picture Show was something of an underground, overtly sexualized cult film I didn't get a chance to watch until late into the 1990s. In 1996, when I finally accepted myself as a gender-fluid person I knew myself to be, the term transvestite was not the label I wanted to saddle myself with. However, gender fluidity wasn't a common thing yet, so with hesitation, I accepted the label transvestite for myself. But I quickly jumped the proverbial ship from that moniker to that of crossdresser as soon as I could. The word crossdresser didn't have as much of the heaviness and stigma as the term transvestite, so I was drawn to it much more readily as a label I identified with. Of course, the term crossdresser still carried as much baggage, stigma, and misunderstanding as the label I had replaced. In the 30 or so years since accepting it as my label, I have found it to be as much a misnomer as an apt description. In fact, the word crossdresser seems to have lost its true intent through some warping of its meaning by those who seem hell-bent on misappropriating it for their own maligned use. I researched Magnus Hirschfeld for the podcast episode, and I learned of his coining of the word transvestite in the official travel documentation he and his colleagues created to afford transvestites some protection from police harassment. With each new bit of information consumed, my appreciation of the term transvestite significantly increased. As clinical as the term always was for me, I realized I was proud to be associated with such an outspoken medical practitioner, with his advocacy for those like me, and with the words he created over 100 years ago to best describe folks like me. Words have power. It is inherent in their nature and in the development of language. They are how we most often communicate with each other. It is why libraries and Amazon.com are filled with volumes and tomes of our history, philosophy, humor, and fiction. In each person's heart and mind, the words spoken can take on unique meanings based on their own life experiences and exposures, their religious dogmas or cultural indoctrinations, and their upbringings and viewpoints of the world. How many stories have we heard about people admonishing those labels as homosexual, only to recant and adjust their worldview when they discover that their own child comes out as gay? How many politicians adamantly oppose and vote down all bills and acts concerning the LGBTQIA+ community, only to be outed by the paparazzi when photos are taken and reveal they're canoodling with a person of their same sex once they have left elected office? How many religious leaders have spouted the words of their God in their position of righteousness, only to be found to have had inappropriate relationships with young parishioners or circumvent funds assigned to good works projects? As we progress in this book, I hope to use my command of the English language, you know, words, to start breaking down how we see these specific words and their meanings. So many of us don't investigate words and language when we do not actively have an invested reason to do so. We rely on what we have heard in passing from others who sounded like they were authorities on the matter. We rely on what our religious elders have told us, what our parents have taught us, what the internet's algorithms have presented as relevant, and what the news entertainment outlets have reported as facts. The terms crossdresser, transvestite, and tranny were rooted in a specific truth once upon a time when originally conceived and uttered. Much time has passed since those moments in history. Let us not forget the past and condemn ourselves to repeat all our errors in the present and irrevocably alter the future in the wrong ways. This has been a reading from the first chapter of Savannah Hawk's new book, Gender 101, an A to Z Handbook and Exploration. The book is available on Amazon and other digital download outlets. Pre-orders are available now. The digital version and the paperback will be available on May 15th, 2024. Thanks for listening. Until next time.
You can find me on Facebook at Savannah Hawk or at Living with Crossdressing and on Instagram at Savannah Hawk. Remember, that's H-A-U-K. And to learn more, go to my website, livingwithcrossdressing.com.
And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Fox and Hanger or at Julie MTF Style, as well as on our website at foxandhanger.com.
Julie, it's your moment.
Fox and the Phoenix podcast uses Anchor, copyright 2024.
Yes, nailed it.
If you enjoy our content and want to make it easier for others to find us, please share with your friends. Tap the subscribe or follow button to the show wherever you're listening. Give it a 5-star rating or leave a review.
And for show ideas or comments, contact us through the podcast, on Facebook at Fox and Phoenix Podcast, or on Instagram at the Fox and the Phoenix Podcast _.